Hey guys, welcome back to Reality TV. I am bringing you this week's episode a little early, a little nifty gifty from me to you. It's a holiday week. I have a lot of stuff going on, but I'm not going to forget about you guys because today I'm going to be breaking down the latest episode of 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. But before I get into that, I want to give you a little heads up. If you have HBO or if you have HBO Go, HBO Now is another one, make sure that you are watching or recording I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Most of you are true crime fanatics, as I am, and you know all about the Golden State Killer, also known as the East Area Rapist. Well, I'll Be Gone in the Dark is the documentary slash biography of Michelle McNamara, the author of I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Patton Oswalt was married to her and she passed away a couple years ago. Anyhow, make sure you're watching it. The first episode came out Sunday night. I don't know how many episodes there are going to be, but I'll have to be talking about it at some point, either on this podcast right here, on Patreon. I don't know where, but I know that we're going to need to discuss it. So make sure you're tuning into that. And also, thank you to Jill and Wendy, who are my newest Patreon subscribers. This week over on Patreon, I'm hoping to get an episode up. I don't want to promise you anything. Most of the time, I'm putting up 4 episodes a month. But like I said, this week is a little crazy. But fear not, I am bringing you 2 new episodes of Total Request Podcast with Amanda. And you guys, I really don't want to pressure anyone to sign up for Patreon or Total Request Podcast, which is on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes. I won't bore you with it. But I'm telling you, we are having such a good time on TRP. And the shows you guys are requesting are the best shows ever. In the past 2 weeks, we've recapped an episode of Toddlers and Tiaras, Josh and Anna Duggar's wedding. This week, we're recapping an episode of Sopranos, Pine Barrens. And Amanda is assigning me to watch Requiem for a Dream, which I don't know anything about the movie, something about drugs. So, you know, I will be totally lost and pulling out my old DARE workbook. Anyhow, check that out if you're looking for a really good laugh. We keep it very light and funny and we just have a great time. We kind of get into a fugue state and before we know it, it's like 2-hour episodes. So anyhow, check that out. I'm just going to get into 90 Day Fiancé because I want to get this episode out to you as soon as possible. Of course, we have to start with Colt and his girlfriend Jessica and what Larissa brought us this week. I don't even know for sure what I think I saw on TV. I guess I should just put the cart before the horse, the cart being Colt, because fucking Colt. More than ever, I swear to God, I'm convinced that he is, you know what? No, I'm not even convinced. I am absolutely certain that he is into like medieval times, kinky Renaissance fair role playing. Because last week he did that little m'lady kiss on the hand. And I think he did it a couple times actually this week too. But when they were walking downtown Chicago, he did this motion with his hand to Jessica, like, let's sit upon yonder, m'lady. I mean, maybe that's where the feminist movement started, was during a Renaissance fair, or maybe during the Renaissance, maybe at a medieval times Renaissance fair dinner. Because hearing a man talk like that and gesture like that makes me want to kick a man in the nuts, not have him open the door for me. Just go away with that bullshit. It's like the more chivalrous Colt becomes, the more disgusting he becomes as well. Maybe that's saying a lot about me and how I view men, but I don't know. I think it's more Colt specific. And when Colt is saying, hey, let's go sit down here, which is what I think that m'lord motion meant, what are they going to talk about on the steps? Is Colt going to apologize? No, no. He just wants to further the gaslighting or further the manipulation with Jess. Instead of apologizing and maybe saying, I came off a little too strong, I didn't mean to come off controlling, something along those lines, he just looks at Jess and says, you going back to the hotel last night, it meant a lot to me. Okay, well, you want to know what would have meant a lot to her, Colt? Doing what Jess wanted. You came here to visit her, to meet her friends, So just do the damn thing. And just because you recognize that she relented to your ridiculous demands, it doesn't mean that she's okay with it. Colt's behavior is disgusting, and thank God we're all seeing through it at this point. But you know what was even more disgusting? Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. Seeing Colt dance. This is a first for me. I don't think I've ever made fun of or snarked on anyone dancing or singing before, because you might have to sit down for this one. Real shocking. I'm not a singer nor dancer myself, but Colt throwing his body around. And this is not about weight. Let me be clear about this. This is about Colt jumping without bending his goddamn knees and moving about with absolutely no rhythm or cadence or beat to any drum. I would love to know what the holy hell song Colt was dancing to. A class of fourth graders playing recorders for the first time. Not that we want to know what Colt's jousting game is like with the ladies, if you know what I mean. But if it is anything like Colt embodying and embracing Caillou's dance party at preschool, let's just say Larissa deserves all the spousal support and psychological support she can get. And speaking of Larissa, I want to know why none of you informed me that Larissa was performing in The Lion King, because it is one of my all-time favorite musicals. There's only one other place I have seen that kind of stage makeup that Larissa was putting on, and it was Simba's mask as designed by the incredible Julie Taymor. If any of you live in Chicago and you went to that exhibit at the Field Museum, I know, breathtaking, right? Well, speaking of taking my breath away, Larissa showing up to that blind date, I mean, that guy would have been lucky to be blind, because she shows up looking like, I mean, I hate to say it because I feel like it's just cliche at this point, everyone's saying it, but she really does look like Michael Jackson if Michael Jackson put enough filler in his face to blow it up the size to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. But before we actually even get there, Larissa was blow-drying her hair after she put her makeup on, which blew my mind. I'm surprised her face didn't melt like a candle, because maybe it's just me. I have sweat glands like a full-grown male gorilla. Not only do I sweat my ass off when I'm drying my hair, but if I were to have makeup and fillers, my face would have looked like Lumiere on Beauty and the Beast. But Larissa, I mean, I guess she's got like industrial strength silicone in there. She shows up, she's smiling. I literally smile from ear to ear because it's scary at this point. But enough about Larissa. Let's meet her date. He looked to be about, 5'4" on a good day with lifts. So, you know, Ed was spitting nails. He's also half white, half sexy. Anyone else feel their vagina cauterize itself together at that point? No. Whoever the smarmy sales guy at the men's warehouse who sold that line and that suit to this douchebag, he needs to be promoted to manager at the men's warehouse for life, like a tenured position just for punishment for that line. This dork with the nose piercing, mind you, is trying to make Larissa believe he's like the next Bachelor. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. That nose ring and that suit and that smarm, it does not match up. Things are not adding together. But Larissa is not doing a much better job, because as soon as they sit down, Larissa starts tossing back that Sauvignon Blanc and she starts letting her new gums and lips start a flapping. I think Larissa thinks, oh God, what's his name? Matthew? Yeah, I think his name's Matthew. She seems to think like he's in on the joke with her about her multiple arrests, but he's not. No one is. Getting arrested 3 times isn't funny, and it is never charming. So you know where Larissa decides to go to heal herself, get some introspection? The Las Vegas Scientology Center, where she goes for a little auditing session to hook herself up to an e-meter, which I'm pretty sure, obviously I'm joking, she's getting some sort of treatment, but it sure looked like something that Scientology would be into. She gets hooked up to this thing, and I haven't been to a lot of these or any med spas like this, but I'm pretty sure we saw Larissa climax on national primetime TV. I mean, she did, right? Because she was begging for it to go inside. And then she did like this huge exhale, sigh. Ew. And her friend is sitting right there like, oh, does that feel good? Do you want to book your next appointment? Please, God, no. That was a lot. That was more than I think any of us deserve or could take on at this point. We're dealing with a global pandemic, and now we have to see Larissa go to her special happy naughty place. But, you know, there we are. Now we leave the two of them with Larissa contemplating talking to Jess, giving her a call, and Colt is going to go to Brazil to meet Jess's parents. And that's where I think we're going to see him strip down to that Speedo, as we have seen in the previews. All right, now let's move on to Elizabeth and Andre. Every week, I think these two can't get any worse, and they do. They're both assholes, and they both suck. However, I'm going to say it. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm actually, this is painful, on Andre's side here, or at least mostly on his side, because of course he's an asshole. He thinks Chuck's money grows on trees, but Lib, Elizabeth, is just as stupid. Plus, there's that whole layer of spoiled frickin' brat. She cannot spend 3 weeks with her in-laws. And I get it. I mean, no one wants to spend 3 weeks with your in-laws unless you are really lucky or really fucking crazy. But Andre has a life sentence with her uppity piece of shit family. But here she is, not even stopping to think for a moment the hypocrisy of this. She wants Andre to spend 3 weeks playing frickin' Rick Steves to her family because, God forbid, they buy a book or use Google. In Elizabeth's mind, it's a good opportunity for you to spend that time bonding with my family over there. You fucking kidding me? Andre should be spending time with his family because he hasn't seen them in years now. He saw his dad for a couple months, but not his mom and his brother and whoever the hell else. Fuck Libby's family. They can't wipe their own ass in Moldova. Andre is right in this case. I know it's painful, but it's true. They can hire a translator if they're wanting hand-holding the entire time they're there. Okay, now this dress scene, God, where do I begin? I suppose with the fact that, you know, they're already fucking married. Elizabeth has a dress already. Buy that fucking fur stole and throw that on top of the dress that you already have. The one sister, Becky with the good hair and the bad mugshot. Yeah, I said it. She's boohooing over there because I can't be there. Andre stole this away from me. He's malicious. I'm going to miss my sister's dream moment. Shut the fuck up. You were in her wedding, bitch. You're fine. This isn't about you. Sit down. Zip your lips, smile, whip out your boob and feed your baby, all right? Andre didn't maliciously do shit to you. Your sister married him and she just said she was the one who wanted this wintry Moldovan wedding. So that is why she is pushing to do it in November, not pushing it to spring when it's convenient for you and your baby, all right? Now, I'm not even going to talk about Elizabeth's mom asking, oh, why Elizabeth needs to be modest for Moldova. Why does she have to be modest in the church? I mean, she's an American, for Christ's sake. Because it's just another double standard. I hate all of them. I know a lot of you are going to hate that I say this, but listen, it's true. I can only imagine who they voted for. So there. All right. Kalani and Asuelu. I need to go to my happy place. Asuelu is like looking at a little happy heart emoji for me. Asuelu likes a mocha and avocado toast. Heavy with lots of fat. It's like he knows when I'm starting to doubt his decisions. He knows my heart. It's like he goes and orders something yummy just to make me smile, just to make me love him more. Because I love watching him. That's the bottom line. Is Asuelu's face, his mannerisms, his little voice, he's the most adorable adult on earth. He might be doing like a Benjamin Button thing, come to think of it. Because he seems to get more naive and more newborn-like by the week. He dozed off in his freaking seat. He slept in his car seat, you guys. Baby had a long day. Add in the white noise driving in the car, and that little man is out like a light. I wonder if Kalani just puts him in the laundry room on top of the washing machine if he needs a little nap. But I guess I need to talk about the measles here. Wow, that's a nice transition. the actual babies, Asuelu, aren't vaccinated. Or actually, the older one is, but the little one isn't. So there's this whole question, is it safe to bring the kids to Samwa during an outbreak? The fact that Kalani voluntarily went into a doctor's office with her level of germophobia, she deserves a pat on the back. She deserves a lot of credit for that. She definitely prescribes to our mantra, the floor, ceiling, airspace, you know, everything is lava theory. I've developed it over a lifetime of OCD, and I am glad that Kalani is on this journey with us. Now, here's the thing. I really can't decide who I agree with here because I do see both sides. This is absolutely one of those cases where you fall on one side or the other with risks and vaccinations, and I'm not even going to get into it, yada, 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 all right? But I don't know what I personally would do. I really don't, because I haven't been in that situation. I do know, however, that I would get a library book. I'll even send it to her via Amazon. She needs to get a book for her third child, her third boy, called Goodnight Rebel Girls. It's in the children's section. It's a real good read. Actually, you can subscribe to the podcast. It'll give them a little insight to how women can be more than just nurses and housewives. Okay, Paul and Karini. All right, we went to our happy place here. It's going to get dark. Paul, Karini, and little Pepito and Paul's transition lenses are heading to Kentucky, but not before Karini's family tries to restrain her or stage an intervention, a severe group hug, so that Paul can't leave with her. And I don't blame them. I'd be grabbing Karini too, chanting her name, trying to scream some sense into her head. You guys, seriously think about this for a moment. Can you imagine someone you love? Think about the most important person in your life, your child, your partner, whoever. Hell, even an acquaintance. Okay, your next door neighbor who you barely know. Can you imagine sending them thousands of miles away to live and be cared for by Paul? It's horrifying to me that Karini's dad, a former police officer who has seen some things in Brazil, is telling Karini to be careful not to upset Paul. It's like, don't poke the bear, hang up your towel straight, or else, you know, sleeping with the enemy, he's going to be swimming across the ocean, following you back to Brazil here. I can only imagine what Paul is like when cameras are not around. I mean, the things his in-laws have seen, the things his own parents have seen, the fact that Paul's adorable little mom has finally gained enough steely determination, that says a lot. And I'm really proud of her for that. To tell Paul that he can't come live with you because you know how he is and he knows how he is, that a girl, Mother Paul, whatever your name is, you've learned your lesson and you are not going back there because she knows that Paul's never going to listen to her. And we saw that right in the airport. He couldn't even take his mom's advice like, hey, you might need to take two trips, get another cart. You think Paul is going to take kindly to living with his parents and them asking him to, you know, pay rent or stop hoarding shit in their house? He's an asshole. Now, I guess that leads us to talking about whatever the hell happened in this car. Little Pepito, I know his name's Pierre, but I just like calling him Pepito because I think it's cuter. Pepito starts crying, so Karini takes him out of the car seat, which, yes, is against the law, and absolutely it's dangerous. But we all know that it's kind of the norm in other parts of the world. It's cultural, not that it makes it right or safe, but Jesus fucking Christ. Mother Paul probably would have pulled over had Paul not started anxiously snapping at her and poking at her, especially after the fact. Like, give her a goddamn second to pull over where it's safer. It's not going to be safe for anyone if you're screaming in the car and she's nervous driving too. And I don't know if I missed something. I don't think I did, but do we ever find out why exactly Paul jumped out of the car? Because the kid was in the car seat at that point. No one was yelling. It looked like she was about to turn into the parking lot and all was going to be safe anyway. And maybe it's just these insane jerk reactions, the dramatic fight or flight moments that prove Mother Paul's decision to let Paul do his own thing is absolutely the right decision to make. I wish Karini and their son weren't along for Paul's wild ride because it really sucks that they have no place to live. They get there and they're in a hotel room. It doesn't seem to have a kitchenette anywhere to heat up something to eat or just relax. But On the other hand, Karini picked him, right? She chose Paul over and over again. But I'm just hoping Paul gets a job ASAP, and so help me if he starts getting picky about a job, like he's above certain things, because at this point, he should be more than willing to work whatever shift, wherever he can get a job. All right, Angela and Michael. Believe it or not, these two are the most boring couple of the season. Angela needs to make a will because she needs to make sure her grandkids inherit all of her fortunes. And they still don't know the status of their K-1 visa. Now, Skyla has made her final decision that she's not going to go to this wedding in Nigeria, which brings me back to the same question I had last week. Does anyone know where this statement of an American must have another American citizen present for the wedding to be a witness? Because I still have not found it. But let's go along with Angela's story as if it were true. She says she needs Skyla there. So what does she do? She calls Michael so he can talk sense into her daughter. No, not the way to go. Skyla doesn't need a new daddy telling her what to do. And it's actually kind of shocking that Angela raised Skyla because she seems to have a little bit of common sense here. Skyla's kids need her. She needs to work. She needs to earn money. And their grandmother is incredibly ill, which begs the question, why can't Angela and Michael wait? Just like Skyla asked them, what's the rush? You know that you want to come here, but what is running there going to do anything? Speed it up by 30, 60 days? I think those 30 or 60 days are probably better spent with their very sick grandmother mother. All right, you guys, you ready for Dabella Dabal, Sinjin, and Tanya? Surprise, surprise, Tanya hasn't showered for a few days. So what better time to straddle your husband's back with your stanky crotch than when he's headed out for an interview in a clean shirt? She's fucking nasty. Oh. And she's also a manipulative narcissist, right? She wants to complain all about Sinjin not working, but she also wants to dictate what type of job he should get, the hours that he should have, and whether he should or shouldn't even get a job. Nothing to stress yourself over if you don't get this bartending job, babe. Yeah, funny story though. Anyone else remember Tanya about to drive off the fucking road because he didn't have a 401k and stock options when she got back from butterfly school? But now all of a sudden, don't worry about the job because it's a job that she doesn't want him to have, despite the fact that he really wants the job. God, I hate her with a burning passion. Just as fiery as her likely chronic yeast infections. All right, now let's talk about Sinjin's interview. Right off the bat, I knew he wasn't going to get the job for, three reasons. Okay, first of all, I knew he wasn't going to get it because of that black dress shirt. I don't like when guys wear solid colored shirts. Well, let me take that back. I don't like bold solid shirts. I can do the pastels, a white, but the solid colors, nope, hate it. Like a purple, black, bright blue, just something about it I don't like. Secondly, it looks like his hair smells like hair. And third, he most certainly has a musk about him because he seems like the type of guy who doesn't wear cologne or he uses one of those all-natural deodorant crystals. And he's just helped Tanya take a shower, so you know he's got like a mildewy shower smell on him. Now, the actual interview portion of the evening was painful. I wanted to get like one of those cartoon hooks, you know, and just like yank him out by the neck because he just needed to. I'm making this motion with my hands, like talking. He just needed to shut up. Just be quiet. And the worst thing you can do is just keep talking. Answer the question, smile, but you gotta shut up. I sat in on an interview where we interviewed this guy and we asked one question. There was like a list of 18 questions. We got to one. The first question being, tell us a little bit about yourself. And he talked for 60 straight minutes. When you see the people who are interviewing you just smiling and nodding a lot, and that crosses your mind, I might be talking too much, you're talking too much. Now the Guinness. I took personal offense to this because I feel pretty confident that I know how to pour a Guinness, even though I've never stepped foot behind a bar. Even before I watched Bar Rescue with John Taffer, I knew that you had to have a certain type of glass and the tilt. How the hell was he a bartender who said he specialized more in beer than cocktails and you don't know how to pour a Guinness? It's baffling to me. I'm starting to regret giving St. John credit last season. I mean, because we're starting to see why he and Tanya are compatible. They're both delusional. They live in this fantasy world where it's like they're still 17. They think they have all the time in the world to decide what they want to be when they grow up. But guess what? TikTok, time's up. What are you going to do? Get a fucking job. I bet Tanya had a real wake-up call, though, when St. John got home drunk. I hate to root for the drunk guy, but I was kind of loving it here. If memory serves all of us correct, wasn't it Tanya who was drunk every night in Costa Rica, pissed off and resentful that St. John was trying to control her, questioning her when and where she was drinking, how much? How dare he? Well, tables have a turned, haven't they, Tanya? Not so fun when you're the one waiting around, is it? God, I love karma. All right, well, I also love you guys, and I know it's a short show this week, but I'll be back next week and every week thereafter. Please remember to subscribe, share, leave a review. Thank you so much for all of your super kind, sweet reviews. Really does help me out. Check out all those links to Patreon in the show notes. Oh, and if you have not heard about this, if you haven't seen me posting on social media, I made a pledge to myself, a commitment that from my birthday, which was June 14th to June 14th, 2021, every week I will find a charity or an organization that I believe in, that I think does good work. I'm vetting all of them, making sure that they are legit. And I am pledging my monetary support. Some weeks, I'll be honest with you, I can only afford $5. Some weeks, $20, more, less. If you would like to join me in doing that, I post those on Twitter and Instagram. I'll also put links in the show notes. So far, I have donated towards Colin Kaepernick's Know Your Rights Camp, also Chicago's Growing Power Chicago Urban Growers Collective. Last week, in honor of Hamilton coming out on Disney Plus this week, I donated to Broadway for Racial Justice. And I am currently doing my research to see who I want to throw my support behind this week. So no pressure, but if you're looking for some great organizations, like I said, I am really doing the footwork, the behind the scenes stuff to make sure that these are really good, legit organizations. So check those out if you're interested. If not, I love that you're here with us and you're listening and watching. Hope you guys have a wonderful holiday week. Be safe, wear the damn mask, and stay salty.